More and more experts are starting to say what we've been worrying about privately for months. No matter the outcome of the November 3rd vote, our nation is in for a very difficult time indeed. If we see the result relentlessly questioned and public confidence undermined, well, that's already happened in 2016. If we see outright violence in our streets, well, that won't be much news either. But for this to happen in connection with an American election, a model for the world for centuries, is not only heartbreaking, it is also terrifying. That's why here at State of Belief, we're embarking on a series of interviews with leaders, both religious and secular, who are preparing for the worst and taking seriously the responsibility to lead and intercede no matter how great the crisis. We'll also be talking to experts on conflict resolution, both home and abroad, people who have seen some of the greatest impasses begin to dissolve as we search for some hope in the face of overwhelming challenges. The title that came to mind for this series is Healing the Nation, shamelessly borrowed from the inspiring organization headed by my longtime friend, the Reverend Dr. Jim Forbes, Jr., the Healing of the Nations Foundation. And so, it's only fair that we start with Dr. Forbes himself. Jim, welcome back to State of Belief Radio.
My pleasure to be with you again.
You have done such inspiring work in conflict areas around the world. Did you ever imagine we would be worrying about Americans rejecting the result of a Democratic vote and possibly even resorting to violence?
I am shocked that that's an issue before us. I think it's wonderful that we grew up in a land where we at least thought that the institutions of government and the procedures with respect to how elections would take place, we could take that for granted as at least one stabilizing element. But now we have come to the place where there is the shaking of the foundation. Mm-hmm. And it feels like if you've never been in a earthquake, well, yeah. Let's say we've all been in one. We are in one now.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Jim, what are the most important lessons that you've learned in doing this work with the foundation? What works in the pursuit of healing?
Well, I am not sure that I'm an expert on these matters. What I have finally come to is, as they say, if you are trying to heal, it makes sense to know what's wrong with you. In fact, I think I remember a time when you saw a guy and his nose was running. You didn't know what medicine to get unless you know, why is his nose running? Mm-hmm. Is it running because he's happy and he's crying and tears are accompanying his joy? Or is it sadness so profound that he cannot contain the tears? Or is it because of an infection and that somehow, whether is it diphtheria? Or has he been on drugs so far? Isn't that interesting? Hmm. Do we know why we are so at each other's necks today? If we got some clarity about that, that might help.
Are people reticent or maybe even scared to ask what's wrong?
I think many of us are afraid to reach out for therapeutic possibilities unless we have renewed assurance that there is remediation that is available, mm-hmm. and likely to bring result. Some people would rather wade through the imponderables of our present crisis than to even reach out, because who knows, if you don't have any, if somebody says, I'm not even going in for a test because I'd rather not know whether I have disease unless I know there's something that can heal it.
Yeah.
And that's where, what I think is, I think most people, I think people say, you know, if you know you got something that can handle what's wrong with me, I may present myself for the analysis.
Jim, what keeps me up at night is knowing that there are many Americans who are not feeling motivated to start the work of reconciliation. They see their quote-unquote side as winning and the other side as a dangerous enemy. In light of that, do you think it's possible to help those who see no need for a coming together at all to rethink that position? And if so, what would that help look like?
Well, as I remember Jesus saying, they that are whole have no need of a physician, which meant those who think they are whole have no need of a physician. That means that if we are in a, if we talk about the state of belief, if we are in a state of denial about the malaise that's covering the land, we are not likely to reach out. However, I think there is a growing sense that whether we didn't want to deny it or not, something is wrong. Mm-hmm. And the question is, I think people are in a research mode. Somebody has told us that told various people we can be greater than we are. Mm-hmm. And they enrolled in the project. And they are waiting to see, will the proposed plan bring us the healing that we want? So I think many people are holding on, even though it looks very bleak, saying, well, we're in the midst of an experiment to see whether the spirit from the national level is going to lead us where we ought to go. Have we really defeated the enemy? Was it the true enemy? All of that stuff. So let me get right to the heart of what I think. That is to say, somebody has taught people that there is a group of people who are adversarial to your well-being. Mm. And some folks have bought into that. Whether or not it's the media, whether or not it's liberals, whether or not it's black people, whether or not it's Latin people in this country or on the south of the border, a whole lot of people think they have identified who is the adversary to their good wishes and good pleasures. Mm. And when somebody has demonized a group of people and you have bought into it, You're eager to see if somebody can embarrass, threaten, and even possibly destroy our adversaries, that's our champion. Mm-hmm. I'm a Pentecostal by background. Am I speaking in tongues? why don't I just come on out and say that the current national leadership seems to have unleashed the spirit of revenge against other people other than those who feel they're despised and rejected by other people. And now that they think they've got an enemy and they have a champion who is able to help them fight that enemy, defeat that enemy, polarization is a part of a plan. Polarization looks like the good fight. we have. So there are people who are absolutely convinced that the future well-being of some people will come as they overthrow the very existence of others. That's a bad lesson, but it is a lesson that is being taught and also being accepted by large swaths of American citizenship.
Mm. Jim, you know State of Belief, you know Interfaith Alliance, always we've tried to respect the right of every religion to set its own dogmas and teachings, no matter how much we may disagree with them. But now we see things like this Catholic priest in Wisconsin using his position to fan the flames of division and disrespect. Is there a line past which, if we don't see self-policing in the given church, we all need to speak out?
Yes, we do need to speak out. And I would like to put it like this. Suppose we reached a point that when we know that we are offending against the compassionate heart of God. Remember, when Jesus says, if you offend one of these my little ones, it would be better for you to be in the midst of an ocean with a millstone around your neck. What happens when it is, as the psalmist says, it's against thee and thee only have I sinned and done this evil? And I say, when we look and see people who have chosen the path of bigotry, the path of antipathy towards people of different races or ethnicities or even religious positions, when that becomes the policy, it becomes, in a sense, a fight against God, a fight against the principles that we at least thought we discerned from God. So when the battle is not just white folks against black folks or liberals against conservatives, but God's children fighting against each other. The way I look at it now, I want to listen to the voice of Mama Eternal, who sees her children at each other's necks. And I hear, like I used to hear my mother say, we had 8 kids, we'd be fussing and fighting. She said, you kids run me crazy. Can't you kids behave? Don't you know you're one family? Stop it. Is it possible that we can hear, amidst all of the struggles going on across this country, can we hear Mama Eternal saying, stop it, you kids, destroying one another? You are a disgrace to your heavenly parent. You're all my children. So I guess I'm working my way around to say the analysis right now that I hold dear is that we are living in an age of despiritualization. That's my constant mantra. When a society loses its source of values, meaning, purpose, responsibility, accountability, environmental hospitality, and foundational aspects of personal, emotional, natural, and divine relationality, that's despiritualization. We as a culture have pushed aside the spirit that we consider to be associated with our very creation, and with the distancing of our consciousness from a sense of God, from a sense of the spirit, we have lost the basis for community. Therefore, we are in the throes of fragmentation and alienation one from the other. And I feel that nothing short of finding our way back to the foundational reality of the God of creation who made us will see us through the struggles we are passing through now.
Mm. Jim, we are worried about what is likely to happen after the 2020 election, regardless of the actual outcome. The potential violence we fear, as well as the actual violence that we've been seeing in a few of our cities, very real. But it strikes me that particularly for African Americans, violence is a daily threat, and it's a powerful influence on how one leads one's life. So would you talk about that, about how the threat of violence looks very different to people already vulnerable to violence from those in positions of power and authority?
My fascinating recollection is to 1962. That's a long time ago. I was in a course taught by George D. Kelsey. He was using for his lectures the galleys from his book, Racism and the Christian Understanding of Man. He said something that shocked me in that classroom and has been with me ever since, and now looms large in my consciousness with all of the police brutality that we are observing. He said, the logic of racism is genocide. He says, why? Because in the case of racism, full-grown racism understands that what's wrong with black people is their being, their existence. They are a diminutive form of human existence. They are flawed creatures, and they introduce a toxic dynamic into any community they're in just by their being. Not whether they're good folks or bad folks, just being black is adversarial to the well-being of creation itself. That man, I was sitting up in the class, so he says, although there are many people who would never think of killing anybody, racism itself, because it has acknowledged that black people are not of the same species, they are not positive contributors to the well-being of civilization. So suppressing them, subjugating them, diminishing them is a part of the larger plan. Get rid of them. Can you imagine what I felt like in a class ever since that time? Whenever I look at a situation, I say that not everybody has been hung from a tree or hanged from a tree. Not everybody is being shot. But that all of us are in at least a preliminary mode of extinction. And COVID-19 reveals the degree to which you don't have to just kill them off, diminish their immunity, their immune system, diminish their health, diminish their sense of well-being, diminish their sense of self-worth, diminish their sense of respect for each other, diminish.
Gosh.
You're well done. Black people don't have to wait till the election for the violence to break out. In fact, there are some who wonder, at least we will have a more realistic response to what our condition has been all along. Vulnerable to genocidal impulses. And that's what segregation does. That's what not having health care does. That's what not having decent jobs, decent wages, education for our children. All those factors are at work every day before you get up. You don't have to have a mean-spirited, bigoted white person do something unusual. The system itself is doing it. And when we raise the question about genocide, a lot of people say, well, I'd never participate in that. One does not have to. The system has arranged. When black people escaped from slavery, police were instituted to go and get them. Fugitive slave acts were saying, if they think they're going to break free, let's get law enforcement officers that trace them as far north as Canada, and you find them and bring them back into the bondage of death. Mm. Now, what I'm really saying to you, my brother, until those who are of a positive humanizing spirit recognize that the mechanisms of genocide are at work in the system of Jim Crow that we have put into order here. Mm. Until that is dealt with, we are all a part of a system, a part of whose agenda and plan is the extermination of those who are the outrace. And so you talk about, people, what's going to happen after the election? Well, my answer is, it's amazing how skillful this system has been. When you get rid of slavery, you find other ways to sustain the genocidal process. Some hopefully find a more, shall I say, a less brutal and barbaric way to go about it. Subtlety? There are many people who would say, oh, no, I'd never support a plan of exterminating people. I wouldn't have supported Hitler if I had been there. I'm trying to say to America, you don't have to be a Hitler. You don't have to be a lyncher. All you have to do is to allow racism to continue to be the official philosophy that shapes our society. It will happen because way will always be found to serve the god of racism, and he will exact the sacrifice of these demonic people who are not truly human, but subhuman. Until we solve that problem, until we decide that racism is a big lie out of the pit of hell, and that we decent people disavow it, and we are preparing now to change it, to get rid of it, to start a new life in America, that we plead humbly with God, forgive us for the barbarity of our ways. Forgive us for accepting the benefits which come from this system, when it is also we receive our benefits from a system that is dedicated to the perpetual extermination of some of God's children. And we love these benefits. I mean, who wouldn't love the power, the money, the housing, the neighborhoods, the jobs that white people systematically have, passing it down? Who wouldn't love to be debt-free. Who wouldn't love to have health care arrangements? Everybody likes those benefits. But when people finally discover that they enjoy them in exchange for the extermination of God's children day by day, I think that when most people finally see that, they will probably wish to say, Lord, can't you bless me in some other way that does not have a murderous intent associated with the productivity out of which I enjoy the benefits of my life? Now listen, Welton, you don't usually listen that long without having to ask a question. So I better stop and let you ask me a question. This is an interview time, not a preview.
Well, listen, when I listen to you, you go to my head and you go to my heart. The Reverend Dr. James A. Forbes is Senior Minister Emeritus of the Riverside Church in New York City. He is president and founder of the Healing of the Nations Foundation, a national nonprofit faith-based corporation that creates transformative dialogues and events to heal the wounds of racial, religious, and economic injustice festering in our nation. Jim, I know you didn't have time to do this, but you did, and you've always been so kind. My friendship with you is cherished, and I thank you for taking the time to be with us again on State of Belief Radio.
Thank you for giving me a chance to save us in my heart.